John, I don't know that I've ever seen anything quite like what we saw on Monday night. You and I have been doing this a long time. You've been covering the Wolves forever. I've been covering professional sports forever. And sometimes things happen that you can't really explain. I'm not surprised that the Wolves won game two. I'm not surprised they played well defensively. I did not expect them to reach into the chests of the Denver Nuggets, pull out their heart, and just hold it there for a while, staring at it. Without Rudy Gobert, they not only shut down the Nuggets, they left them completely discombobulated. They made them look like amateurs. I'm still stunned by that performance.
Yeah, Jim, I think there's always recency bias and hyperbole and things like that that come to play when we're in the moment and trying to assess what we saw. But certainly in the moment in Denver, while I was watching it play out and in the days after, as I've rewatched, as I've kind of tried to digest exactly what happened, I think it is, you know, unquestionably the best defense I've ever seen an NBA team play, like, you know, since I've been working certainly on this beat for 20 years, covering the league for the last 25 years. I just have never seen a team reach that level of intensity, ferocity, connectedness, everything that you can possibly take. And I do think that is important to point out as we look at that, just how good Denver usually is, you know. And we kind of, after the Phoenix series, a lot of the assessment was, oh man, the Suns, what a mess. They have a lot of sort of looking in the mirror to do, and look at how much they screwed up. And now you look at the way that this Nugget series has played out to this point, you have to say, now it's the Nuggets that look completely discombobulated. Well, maybe it's the Timberwolves that really deserve this. And I think they did. I mean, it was just a remarkable, remarkable, especially first half performance in that game too.
He's John Krasinski. This is the John Krasinski Show, part of TalkNorth.com. Best way to listen to this show or any show you like at the network. Please subscribe to your favorite podcast app. It's free. It's the easiest way to listen. Also, we had Michael Grady, the great Timberwolves play-by-play announcer, on the Don Mitchell Show, Dawn of Sports, this week. I highly recommend that conversation. Michael's always great. He offered some really cool insights on the team, what it's been like to be around them this week. We want to thank our many important sponsors. We're coming to you from the Aquarius Home Services Studios. We want to thank Defined Destinations, TSR Injury Law, Head Flyer Brewing, and Shepherd Goods and Lamb Chops Clothing Line. We'll tell you more about each of them, and we'll do a Twitter question for a giveaway with Shepherd Goods and Lamb Chops Clothing Line later in the show. We're talking here on Wednesday. Both of us were at the Rudy Gobert press conference, honoring him for winning Defensive Player of the Year for the fourth time, first time with the Timberwolves. I'm running out of things to say about it, but I'm sure you have something to say about it.
Yeah, you know, I just think that the thing that really stood out in terms of listening to Rudy Gobert talk about this award, about kind of the way things have progressed over the last 2 years, it just really did stand out how comfortable he is here. He talked about this feeling like home in Minnesota. He talked about kind of the connection that he has with his teammates. Every single teammate was there for the press conference that announced it. And I do think that is just very important for someone like Rudy. He needs to feel rooted in the place where he is. I don't think he was like that last year, not with the team, not with the city, not with just the organization in general. I think that there was just that acclimation process, but the way that he has settled in, the way that he feels that this team and this town have embraced him, I think that is directly attributable to his return to his stature as the best defensive player in the league. I think he's a vibes guy. I think he really thrives off his environment. And listening to him talk about that, as we record, this morning, as we're recording this on Wednesday, it was very apparent that this is the kind of connection that he has been hoping for. And it's here now, and it's a big reason for his individual success, which has, again, you know, really fed the team success that we've seen this year.
He's John Krasinski from The Athletic. I'm Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune. Brandon Morton is our producer, as he has been for so many years. Take us deeper into Rudy, his mindset. Do you think the comfort preceded the success, the other way around, and what led to the comfort? Is that more living here, teammates, organization? How would you describe all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that the comfort had to come before the success came. And last season, certainly early on in the season, you could definitely see that his teammates, that Rudy himself, certainly the fans, were all trying to figure out what the heck was going on here. Why is this taking so long to click? Is this ever going to click? And Rudy Gobert is a player who is plugged into the greater conversations that happen around the league. And he reads, you know, what is written about him. He listens to what is said about him. He certainly absorbs the energy in the arena for better or worse. And I do think that you could feel that in those first 3-4 months of last season, that none of it was going well from any of the perspectives. And I remember there was one point where, you know, Rudy, fairly early in the season, Rudy kind of responded, rather forcefully when he heard boos in the crowd from the fans. He did not like that. He thought that was very premature and knee-jerk. He didn't think that people were giving this team and him enough time to settle in and figure each other out. And I think Rudy really understood that this was going to take time. Yeah, I remember he told me before the last season even started, he said, look, there's going to be adversity. We are going to hit it. It's going to be difficult. And that is going to be what makes or breaks us. And he was right about that. The adversity came. Some of it they didn't handle well. Some of it, you know, didn't go well. Several of the people who didn't handle it well are gone now. Particularly D'Angelo Russell was moved out. You move in people who understand Rudy and who know how to play with him. And I think that the organization, Tim Connelly, Chris Finch, they have all throughout all of this, especially the struggles early, they stayed with him. They did not give up on him. And I think that really resonates with Gobert. He wants to have people expressing faith and trust in him and belief in him. And I do think that the early criticism that he got, especially from Timberwolves fans, stung him. And I don't think that he enjoyed it at all. It has obviously this year changed 180 degrees. Like that Target Center is a Rudy friendly environment. They love him. I think that fans, maybe some of them who booed him last year, probably feel a little embarrassed and sheepish about their knee-jerk reaction. And I think they have responded by cheering him even louder and almost as an apology to the initial reaction. And so in turn, Rudy has felt that warmth and he has won them over. And I think that means something to him. I think that expecting the adversity, he was one of the few that really kind of were like, this is going to be bumpy. We're going to have to figure it out. It has played out similarly to what he thought. And now that it is going the right direction, I think he feels a great satisfaction in riding it out and sticking through it, and that the organization stuck with this plan, this, you know, Rudy and Kat initial two big plan, and didn't panic and bail on it after last season, which is what a lot of people were hoping that they would do.
And obviously the Gobert trade has justified itself in a big way. I'm still stunned. And listen, when they traded D'Angelo Russell for Mike Conley and Nikhil Alexander-Walker, I liked the trade. Number one, I was glad they were getting rid of D'Lo under any circumstances, and I didn't think he was ever going to work with Gobert. Number two, I always loved Conley's game. But I liked it in a limited way. I liked it because they're getting rid of D'Angelo Russell, and at least you're bringing in Conley, who would be good for Gobert. I had no idea it would work out this well. Conley has been phenomenal in every possible way, as a leader, as a player, as a personality. And Nikhil Alexander-Walker is one of the great finds in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that anyone, Tim Connelly included, Chris Finch included, expected Nikhil Alexander-Walker to blossom into what he has. He is a player who has been one of their very most important guys in two straight playoff series now. He has become an energy guy, one of the best perimeter defenders in the league, period. Not bench players, not, supporting role players, just one of the best perimeter defenders in the league with Jaden McDaniels. It's amazing. And so certainly that emergence has taken that trade to a different stratosphere, because you're right, Jim. I think that just the simple D'Lo for Conley trade would have been justified and would have been enough to make that move, because you needed a point guard that was going to work with Rudy, that had experience having success with him, that believed in him, that was going to give this whole grand experiment a chance to work. D'Lo, it just wasn't going to happen that way with him. And so you do that, you get Conley, great. Immediate upgrade, just in terms of chemistry, in terms of the fit, in terms of all of those things. Fantastic. Now you add in a player who was hanging on to the league by his fingernails. Like, he had bounced around a bunch, had a bunch of different coaches, couldn't find a role. Even on that Jazz team, which was not very good, was having a hard time getting minutes. And here he is playing 30 minutes a night and making Jamal Murray's life a living hell out there. Like, there's a little bit of luck involved. There's plenty of scouting and planning and things that go into it, because both Connelly and Finch were familiar with Nikhil, knew that he could probably give more than what they had seen from him in his previous stops, but to see him emerge like this is phenomenal. So then you add to it that he's going to be making $4.5 million or whatever next season as well. I mean, one of the great bargains in the league. And so just kudos to Tim Connelly. Another, when we talk about Rudy, who got off to a bad start from an impression wise, with Minnesota fans, I think Tim Connelly certainly was hearing a lot of criticism and heat early for the way that the Gobert trade had played out. And now here he is, as quite literally, if there's a list of five executives in the league, he's right at or near the top of it, with Sam Presti, with, a couple of others. And he has to be considered, with what he's done in Denver and now what he's done in Minnesota, as one of the very best in the league doing it. And just an incredible asset for the Timberwolves. There is no coincidence that this success and this relative stability and harmony, it all coincides with Tim Connelly's arrival. It's been, they're getting their money's worth and so much more from him, and his ability to make that deal with Utah and get Nikhil Alexander-Walker with him, and then just the way he's taken off, it just moves that trade into the stratosphere of most effective and most important trades, in the league in the last couple of years.
No doubt about it. Hey, we want to thank our longtime sponsors, TSR Injury Law, 612 TSR Time, 612 TSR Time, Nas Reed. You don't need to know much more. If you're ever hurt, just call 612 TSR Time. They'll take good care of you. They might even give you a Nas Reed beach blanket, because that's the kind of people they are. It was great to see Steve Terry out at Headflyer Brewing the other night when Tim Connelly was there. Tells you a lot about those guys, that they just come hang out with everybody. Connelly to Steve Terry, Chris Finch. It's just been a... And that's my next topic I want to get to. But first, before we get to our next topic on this show, tell us about Define Destinations.
DefineDestinations.com. It's your place for just unbelievable trips that are, kind of exotic in nature. Certainly going to Europe, going, to the Caribbean, going to all over the world. It can be a very daunting kind of prospect to try and plan a trip? Are you going to the right places? Are you staying in the right hotels? Are you in the right areas? What kind of things can you see when you get there? Go into defineddestinations.com. They will, the people who are locally based here will help you plan a trip of a lifetime. You can go to Spain. You can go to anywhere in Europe. You can go to Ireland. You can go, you know, you name it. They have travel packages that will get you to where you want to go. They will set you up in hotels that are both comfortable, affordable, and in the middle of the action. And they can also help you plan out your itineraries from sights to see, from food to eat, from places to go, hikes to make, all of those things. Usually most of these trip packages include airfare, they include hotel, they include all sorts of different suggestions about what to do. It's a great place to go if you're a little bit intimidated about the process and the prospects of traveling abroad like I am. And so go to defineddestinations.com, your place for local guidance on some of the best trips you could ever take.
Let's talk about vibe, because, you know, even before we knew that this team was this good, there was a good vibe around the team. And I think part of that is Connolly. He wants people to come to work in a good atmosphere. Finch is the same way. They've built out not only a really talented group of coaches and player development people, but I don't know. I've been around good teams that were not much fun to be around. This is a really good team, and it's been a pleasant team to be around from the start this year.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you ask yourself, it's kind of chicken or egg, is like, you know, are the vibes from the winning, or does the winning come from the vibes? And I do think that, you know, of all of the teams that I've been around, this, you know, over my years on the beat, this is certainly one of the most emotionally stable. I mean, we have seen they argue with the referees, they get excited and stuff like that, but just like emotionally stable, connected groups from the front office all the way down through coaching staff, athletic training staff, support staff, and then into the locker room with the players. And I just think that, you know, there are not any assholes in here right now. And sometimes it's good to have one or two of those, like to give your team an edge, to kind of bring some competitive fire. We saw what Pat Beverly did for this team a couple of years ago, and I think that was really effective. But with this particular team, there are none of those people. They're hyper competitive. Ant is hyper competitive. Rudy is. Mike Conley is. Like Kyle Anderson. All of these guys. They have that that fight in them, that intensity and that edge. But they also don't have the combativeness. Don't have the toxicity that sometimes comes with some of those temperaments. And, you know, sometimes you do wonder, like, is it possible to win at a really high level without a couple of those people around to stir the pot, to keep it going that way? And so far, the answer for that has been a resounding yes. I mean, I think Connolly in particular really focuses on the good people part of the equation when team building, and every executive in the history of mankind has said, we want good people and good players. Very few follow through on that edict, and Tim Connolly has. I mean, Rudy is a genuinely good person who, you know, maybe he's a little quirky sometimes or whatever, but he is about the right things. He treats people well. He, you know, he sets a good example. He does all these things. Kat is an incredibly kind-hearted individual who wants those people around him to have a lot of success and gets extremely happy when he sees guys like Rudy win Defensive Player of the Year, Nas winning Sixth Man of the Year. Like, he is a team guy that way, and I think that is good. Mike Conley is the ultimate quiet leader, who is a very nice guy, but knows when to kind of turn up the heat and to hold people accountable. You know, Ant is a leader and a guy who wants it incredibly badly, but also has figured out the very delicate part of getting people to follow you and building trust and building camaraderie with the group while you are taking this entire league over like he is. So I think just all of that coming in, and then you had, you know, Matt Lloyd and Dell Demps and Sachin Gupta and all the guys in the front office, John Wallace. You had the coaching staff. Mike Inori is awesome. Kevin Hansen, Elson Turner, Pablo Prigioni, Chris Hines, like all of these guys, Corliss Williamson, they're all really just genuinely good guys. And I think that that just has made a really unique environment. And I think they're all pulling for each other and they're trying to do something together here. And that energy is palpable in there.
It's amazing that we've gotten this far into the podcast and we aren't even talking about Anthony Edwards taking over the league. I think we'll do that next. To first let you know, working with Head Flyer has been a blast. John's brought out great guests, Chris Finch, Tim Connolly, Michael Grady, Dane Moore. We've had great shows out there with great crowds. So tell us more about what's going over at Head Flyer.
Yeah, Head Flyer Brewing, Northeast Minneapolis. One of the very satisfying things about my job, about this partnership that we have built with a lot of our partners who have been gracious enough to support our podcast, it has been sort of seeing that support returned from the Timberwolves fan community. And Head Flyer has become an absolute destination for Timberwolves games. They are packing the tap room, hundreds of people coming out to watch these games, whether it's a late game on the road, whether it is a normally scheduled game this weekend for games 3 and games 4 on Friday and Sunday. They are going to have big crowds. They're going to have drink specials. You know, if you can't go to the game at Target Center, the next best thing is to gather with your buddies and be in somewhere where you're surrounded by a bunch of fans who are all doing the same thing. And you can go to Head Flyer and then just enjoy an incredible atmosphere and environment. But most of all, with great beer. I love the beer there. Any kind of flavor of style that you want, go to Head Flyer Brewing and have it there. They just recently celebrated their 7-year anniversary last weekend. So the good vibes are going on at Head Flyer Brewing in Northeast Minneapolis. So stop on by, wear your Wolves gear, have some hang out with your buddies. The weather's beautiful. Sit on their patio, watch the Wolves game and cheer them on and just enjoy it. It's been a great partnership and it's only getting started.
And tell us about Shepherd Goods and Lamb Chops.
Shepherd Goods Lamb Chops Clothing, SGLambChops.com. Super high quality, super stylish hoodies, shorts, t-shirts, yeah, all sorts of hats, different sort of things. Craig and Jordan are at Wolves games. They're sitting courtside at Target Center. I saw them in Denver. They were hanging out with Jimmy Jam and DJ Ski and living it up and celebrating the Wolves in Denver as well. And they're just good guys who have come up with just great clothing that people love to wear. And their shorts, I've said it before, are the best shorts that I own. I love wearing those. Their hoodies are super comfortable. Their t-shirts are ultra high quality. And if you go there, JONK20 for 20% off anything that you have there at SGLambChops.com. And at the end of this show, we will take a Twitter question and the winning Twitter question will get a free pair of Lamb Chops shorts. So go to SGLambChops.com, get yourself some cool merch, and you'll be looking good and feeling incredibly comfortable all summer long.
Good stuff. Thanks to all of our sponsors. We do appreciate it. So Ant, you know, I wrote about it the other day. You know, I've talked about it. We are not the type to just say, okay, all of a sudden Anthony Edwards is Michael Jordan. But now you have Jordan's contemporaries making the comparison. You have great players. You have Reggie Miller, you have Jamal Crawford saying, well, you know, and again, we're not saying he is Michael Jordan, but the style of play, the two-way player, the ability to take over a game, the ability to do everything on a court you want to player to be able to do that he's doing at the age of 22. He's turning some heads right now.
It's yeah. I mean, that's exactly it. And you know, it's like Neo in the Matrix. Like he's starting to see the code the way that he needs to dominate. And I thought that the first two games of this series have been, really telling in that the first game, it was, I'm going to dominate with my scoring, 43 points. He also played great defense and got others involved, but the scoring, the shot making was the overall dominant aspect of his game. Then you go to game two, and he still had 27 points, which is no small feat at all. But the way that he controlled that game, the way that he got Cat involved, the way that Nas got going, the way that he made sure all of his teammates were getting in the flow and in their shots as he was contributing to that hellacious defense, that was another way for him to control the outcome and to dominate. And so he's doing it in all sorts of fashion. He is, I think he is far ahead of what any reasonable expectation would be in terms of his ability to kind of read the game and see it and see what is needed on a given night. And it is to the point now where it looks like the Nuggets are helpless to control him. He has an answer for anything that they're going to throw at him. You want me to double? You want to double me? I'll move it quickly and we'll get a wide open three from someone else. You're going to single cover me with Aaron Gordon? I'm going right by him. You're going to single cover me with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope? I'm going to just back him down onto the block, then hit a turnaround jumper right over him. Like he has the answers to the tests now. And the thing now that you are seeing, because of the incredible performances that he is having and because the team is winning at such a high level, now the machine of the NBA is kind of in motion behind him. Steph Curry is not in the playoffs. LeBron James is not in the playoffs. Kevin Durant is not in the playoffs. What this league needs now is a megawatt star to take that mantle. And they have clearly deemed Anthony Edwards to be worthy of that treatment. Stephen A. Smith every other day is saying that reminds him of MJ, reminds him of Kobe, that the Wolves are going to win the championship. Bill Simmons just said on his podcast that we went through this long what if. What if the Timberwolves sweep the Nuggets? What if they go on to win the championship? Ant can be the king of the league. Like, there are all of these conversations that are starting to happen around Anthony Edwards that are meant to anoint him, because in the absence of the other kings that have been dethroned. And so the opportunity is there, and it's startling to watch. Like, you just see like how this PR thing really works and how it's happening. And Ant, to his credit to this point, is handling it beautifully.
No doubt about it. We could talk about any of these subjects for like half an hour, but we try to keep these podcasts to a time limit that allows you to listen on a walk or at the gym or during a commute. Actually, a lot of the praise I hear from people about this podcast is you can listen to it in a bite size. So we can get to these subjects more in depth as the Wolves spend the next 2 months of the playoffs. For now, I was really impressed the way Towns has had a really good playoffs, but especially game two, Gobert's out. Not only does Towns and Ant honor Gobert by scoring 27 points apiece, I thought Towns' defense on Jokic was fantastic.
For a player who has been maligned for only being about offensive stats, for not being about winning, for not being able to play defense, all of these things, to see him rise to the occasion the way that he did in game two, to see him really kind of express a lot of humility just in the way that he's played throughout these playoffs and kind of taking on different roles. It's something special to see, because he has clearly believes and seen that if he plays the way that he is being asked to play, that this team can go as far as they want. And that if the more that they win, the more shine he is going to get from that. He has tried to do it the other way and it hasn't worked. And now he has just settled into being an incredibly mature veteran that is just here to do what is needed to do on that given night. I thought he was fantastic against Jokic in game two. I think it's probably, you know, one of the top two or three games he's ever played in a Timberwolves uniform, because not only did he stand up and really fluster Jokic and made him work, and it was hard for the Nuggets to get going because of Karl Anthony Towns and Naz Reid and the way that they were able to single cover the best offensive player in the league. But also on the other end, he hit big shots. He got going early so that the Timberwolves had an early lead in the first quarter and did not allow the Nuggets to ever have belief that they were going to win this game, because they couldn't stop him on the other end either. So it was a complete two-way performance. It was absolutely crucial given Rudy was out. And to see him kind of step to the forefront like that, it is, you know, it's satisfying for me just knowing everything that he's been through, and some of the criticism that he's received, as I've said before, has been deserved. But here's a guy who's in the moment, is giving himself up for the team, and he's doing what is needed and doing what very few people thought he was capable of doing. And that's been really cool.
Devin Booker is a great player. He was one of the reasons the Suns went to the finals a few years ago. Jamal Murray is a proven great competitor, great clutch player, championship level player, second best team on the defending champs. Mike Malone is known as a really good guy and a great coach. The Wolves have caused all these people to lose their minds.
Yeah, no, I thought, you know, you asked a great question of Conley that way when at the press at practice today. And he, you know, he said, you know, I it's not a goal of ours, but it's certainly a byproduct of the way we play. Now, I think that he is saying that just in terms of, like, he's being politically correct, or he's being diplomatic, because, you know, if he said that, it may, you know, kind of be some bulletin board material. But there is no question that a lot of what has led to the Timberwolves being 6-0 to this point has been they are playing with a level of aggression and intensity that other star players are not used to seeing or cannot match. And Jamal Murray, whether he's, you know, whether it's because he's injured or what it is, he is completely frustrated that he cannot get where he wants to go because Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Jaden McDaniels are in his shorts for 40 minutes a night. No matter if it's 94 feet, wherever he is on the court, they are there. And he has lost his cool. It's been a disaster of a playoff series for him. Game two was as bad as he has ever looked on an NBA court, not only just in going 3-for-18, but in the petulance and in the whining and in the, just the overall comportment, the overall, you know, his overall vibe was not of a championship winning point guard who always makes the right plays down the stretch. He was a child in game two. And the fact that he is not suspended for game three is absolutely ridiculous. I cannot imagine what the discourse would be today if Karl Anthony Towns had been throwing a heat pack onto the floor in the middle of a game and had thrown a towel at an official. Like, what kind of criticism would he have felt and heard and all of those things? Jamal Murray, I'm sure he's getting some criticism, certainly locally in Denver. It has not been near what it should be. And I think the league made a huge mistake in not suspending him and just fining him. But that's where we are. But that's what the Timberwolves have done now back-to-back series, is they have taken, you know, two of the very best players in the league, two of the most competitive, like, big shot making type players, and just reduce them to puddles. And it's been just kind of really eye-opening to see that happen.
Last topic before we get to the Twitter question. We cover these people. We get to know them. Some of them we grow somewhat fond of, even if we don't let that affect the way we cover the team. I'm just happy that Finch was able to sit courtside. I think it would have been just a horrible thing for him if he'd been stuck in a suite as the team he helped build was going through this. So I'm sure it helped the team that he was that close to. I'm also glad for him that he was that close.
Yeah, for sure. And I wrote about it today at The Athletic. Like, I think people need to understand first of all, how painful that injury is. Now, yeah. I have not had it, but you talk to anyone who has been through the surgery, the rupture, and then the surgery to follow. They say that this particular injury, the ruptured patellar tendon, is about as painful of a leg injury as you can have. And the recovery is grueling. And it usually requires that after surgery, you're kind of laid up in a bed, your leg is elevated all the time because that's the only time that you can get any real relief from the pain of it. And that I saw someone describe it as, it's like having a vice on your knee that's just constantly being turned and turned and turned and squeezing that area. He has told people around him that he is in pain all of the time, and not just like a little pain. Like, I think there is searing pain in his leg all of the time. And to see him crutch around Ball Arena, to see him sit in the bench area in the second row for games 1 and 2, that level of toughness should not be underrated. And I know that the players have responded. They have looked at their coach and said, this guy's in a lot of pain. He is still joining the fight with us. That has really kind of served as a rallying point for them. We're not going to let him down. He asks a lot of us. Now he's delivering. We're going to deliver for him. And so I think that's a big part of these first two games and why, you know, the Timberwolves have just been the flat out tougher team, and seeing their coach kind of grit his teeth and go through all of the things that he's gone through to be with them, I think is having a big effect on that.
No doubt. Do you have a Twitter question for us, John?
We do, from Jack Regnow. The national broadcast talks a lot about how Mike Anori seems to be the one making the majority of coaching decisions. Is that true, or is it because he's more visible than Finch? And I think it's an important point to kind of talk about here as we wrap the show up, is that Finch is on the bench, and so he is still very, very involved in the decisions, in the rotations, in the adjustments that happen in the middle of the game, at halftime, all of those things. He is talking to players on the bench. He's very vocal. And so he is still the shot caller, if you will, because, you know, he's right there and in the middle of it. He's just not able to stand up and walk on the sideline. And so, but where Mike Anori is really providing a ton of value is he is the one who is up patrolling the sideline. He's the one who can have conversations with the officials to try and point things out and lobby for their case. He is the one who is communicating directly with the players while the game is going on. If they have quick questions while there's a free throw, he's calling out some plays every once in a while to get them to run. He's shouting encouragement and things like that. So his role has been a big one in this series. And I think the way that he has handled it has been about as good as you can possibly ask for from an assistant coach stepping into that role. And the Wolves clearly have not missed a beat with that. A lot of that is because Finch is right there. It's not like he is abdicating any responsibility or anything like that. He's just not quite as vocal while the game is going on. Micah's had to do that. It can be a delicate situation. He's handled it perfectly.
Well, I hope the Wolves keep it going, because this is all so much fun. This podcast is a blast. John does great work with it. This team's fun to be around. This fan base has been fantastic. The crowds at Target Center have been fantastic. My wife has been among them many times. So, hey, this is fun. Hope we get to keep talking about these games for quite a while here. For Brandon Morton, John Krasinski, and TalkNorth.com, I'm Jim Suhan. We'll talk to you soon.